Hi, everyone, and welcome back to OTTB on Tap. I'm Neve.
And I'm Emily. Hey, Neve, what's on tap today?
Today, we're catching up with returning RRP trainer Chelsea O'Brien. Chelsea is based in Virginia, and she's back at the makeover this year with two horses, one of her own and one representing the nonprofit Pastured Place, where she's an ambassador. Chelsea, welcome back to OTTB on Tap.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited.
Let's start by checking in. What does life look like these days? How are things going in and out of the barn?
So it's just horses, and more horses, like 14 to 17 hours a day right now.
Boy.
I am in the tail end. There's a light at the end of the tunnel of foaling season. So,
I forgot.
You've had what, almost 30 so far?
We've had 30. I've probably foaled like 26. There's a few that were born during the day. So I go at night and help. She's very high tech and has remote watchers and cameras. Nice. We have foal alerts. We have milk testing and all of the things. So we have it down to a pretty good science, but there's been a few times where a couple of them had to have exhausted us. But yeah, so we've had 8 to go. And we do mostly racehorse babies, but we've had a few warm bloods and a couple of ponies, which that's my first time this like ever doing ponies. And that's what people say is true. They're wild babies. We've had some really cool babies, racehorse babies, so I'm excited to see how they grow. But
one of your past babies just did really well, didn't he?
Yes. Yeah. So I did not foal him. The farm that I used to work for, he was a Maryland bred. He was a yearling when we came, and I foaled. And then on my off season of foaling, I did the yearling prep. And he was a dude. Okay. His name's Mindframe. And he ran twice, then ran in the Belmont and was second in the Belmont, and then was second in the Haskell. And then he had some sort of bruise in his foot. And then, so he had quite a bit of time off, and then he came back to run in, I think it was a G3, the Gulfstream Mile, and he came back and won that. And that was a month and a half ago. And then he ran on Derby Day in the Churchill Down Stakes, which is a G1 $1 million race. And so he won that. Wow. And it was like a crazy race. There was like, it was a 4-horse photo finish.
Wow. That's so exciting for you, though.
Yeah, no, it's cool. Again, I have a very small role in his life. You know what I mean? I groomed him and braided his mane over and pulled his mane and taught him how to bathe and stuff.
Hey, they got to start somewhere.
But it's still cool, right?
Yeah, that's really awesome. Cool.
That's a once-in-a-lifetime thing to say you got to be a very small hand in. So that was cool. But yeah, so right now I'm like full throttle. Horses at my farm all day long and then babies at night. And I think we have 8 left to go.
Wow. I'm exhausted just listening to that.
I know.
This is fueled by heavy amounts of caffeine. By Celsius.
For those that are just getting to know you, can you give us a little background and how did your OTTB journey begin?
So I started riding when I was 5. I went to a YMCA camp and it was all downhill from there. Begged for lessons and started riding. But I would say I probably started riding thoroughbreds. I grew up a little bit south of Boston, Massachusetts, and my trainer growing up would take some off the track and we'd get on and ride and get them going and then she'd sell them. So my starting thoroughbreds probably started when I was like somewhere between 13 and 14. And I just loved them. I loved their brains. There was one that really sticks out to me who was amazing. He was like 17.2 or 17.3 or something. And he was only 4. Wow. And he was so smart and he could just jump. And it was just fun. My horses growing up were all so tough that none were thoroughbreds. They were all just hard-headed. Bolters. I had just spooky paint who just would spin me off. I have a great seat, but a lot of trauma. And so I'm a doomsday thinker because of those ones. The thoroughbreds, on the other hand, love them to death. So then I moved to a farm like in 2000 and 2008, the market crashed and I still wanted to keep my horses. So I moved to a self-care farm. So I started taking care of my horses before and after school. And I ended up helping with a lot of the farm was a combination between Western pleasure horses and racehorse rehab and layup.
Interesting.
So that's how I got into Western riding and thoroughbreds. Interesting. So I started helping with the rehabs and the layups and things. And I didn't know until I went to the racehorse side of things how much I didn't know. I was the kid who could ride anything. I would ride 15 horses a day on the weekends. Put me on anything. I'm yeehawing around. Oh, your horse bucked you off 10 times? Let me get on. You know, that kid. And then I moved to that farm and I realized how much like care things I did not know, even though I'd been riding for 10 or 12 years when I moved there.
Yeah.
Learned how to bandage properly and how to treat wounds and how to do all that stuff. And probably before that, the best I could do was soak an abscess foot. And so it was really cool to get that experience and learn how to bandage properly. And I think that anybody who wants to have a good career in horses, go learn from a race tracker.
Yeah.
If you want to learn how to take care of your horse's legs and learn about proper conditioning and things like that, you can learn so much from racehorse people. So anyways, I helped her restart a few and sell a few. And then I ended up buying one right before I went to college. And then it was all downhill from there. And now I have, I don't know how many I have of my own.
Don't count them. It's That's like, what I recommend. Like Just eight, don't count them.
I have 8 thoroughbreds of my own.
Oops. They are like potato chips, right? Yeah. And it sounds like you might have your eye on another one. Pastured Place has become a big part of your story. Can you tell us just a little bit about the organization and your role as an ambassador for them?
So I know we talked about this before in another episode, but for the people who haven't heard before, Pastured Place is a not-for-profit. They have 2 farms. One is a retirement farm, and then the other farm is in Pennsylvania where they do a lot of the retraining. And it's a relatively newer since the end of 2022. And they're dedicated to the aftercare of thoroughbreds, and they've helped rescue some from some really bad situations. And I think they have a lot of retired horses. I want to say somewhere around 100 retired horses.
Wow.
And then they're also putting a lot of time and training and effort into a lot of horses. They have 2 really great riders who ride for them at home in Oxford, Pennsylvania, who are very talented event riders. Even the ones who aren't going to, say, RRP, which I believe they're both bringing horses to RRP this year, they're getting a lot of horses out and exposure and things like that. And I started with Pastured Place at the beginning just by happenstance with the whole OTTB market post from one of the board members from Pastured Place, Megan. I think this had to have been December of 2022. And she posted something like, who would want to bring a fully sponsored horse to the RRP this year? And I was like, I would love to. And the only stipulations were that you had to be within 3 hours of Oxford, Pennsylvania. And I am. So I was like, okay, this is great. I put my application in and told them that I was interested in doing mostly Western riding and barrel racing. And there was a lot of different people who applied, but the majority was eventers and they wanted to try different things for different horses, not put just a bunch of event horses in the same division. So they sent me a horse and they sponsored 2 other riders that year. And they have just been so instrumental in so many things for me. They've given me so much, what's the word I'm looking for?
Like a boost?
Yeah, like a boost, but I feel like they've given me a lot of confidence. The opportunity that they're giving me is something that I never would have imagined I would be able to do for myself, and it was a bucket list item for me. And they took a chance on somebody like me who doesn't have a long show career or a big show record or anything like that, but they took a chance on me and I took it very seriously. And I just feel so blessed to have had that opportunity because it's opened so many doors for me, meeting people like you guys and showing people the versatility of the thoroughbred and giving horse. I'm very passionate about the underdog and proving people wrong as far as all these unicorn in search of ads and things like that. And I'm like, give me your beat up, banged up. Not that Pasture Place is sending me horses like that, but like those kind of things are near and dear to my heart. And horses like you, not that there's anything wrong with you, but he is a perfect angel sent from heaven. But you know, there's some things like the cribbing and things like that, and tie back surgery that
one thinks they need that perfect horse, right? That they can't have any dings or any imperfections or absolutely nothing. They can never have gotten a hot nail from a shoe from being shod because maybe that was their fault and it's going to happen again. Yeah. Things that it's been pin fired. Oh gosh.
Oh no. And I love that they're willing to give us the opportunity to work with these horses to, so that we can prove people wrong.
Yeah.
Because
that's awesome.
That's a huge thing. In any discipline, horses are going to get hurt. And it's not always because of bad care. It's not always because just things happen. They get running around in the paddock and then something crazy happens. And so giving horses, like, it's like that Seabiscuit quote. What do you just throw a whole life away because they are not
a little banged up?
I just feel they're living that. And I want to be a part of that. And I'm so proud to represent them. And I want to do the best job and do the best that I can by them. But really, in reality, what I'm doing right now, I couldn't be doing without them.
For sure.
Very nice. Let's talk about the two horses that you're bringing to the 2025 makeover. Can you introduce them both and then tell us how they each came into your program?
So we have 5-year-old Peppy, whose racing name is the Pepsodent Show, and he's the horse from Pasture Place. He's by V.E. Day, who's an English Channel, and and I think I told Emily.
I know how Chelsea feels about English Channel, which might be contrary.
Somebody, I don't want to say it out loud because he's changing my mind about it, but I had a chip on my shoulder about English Channels, but that's because the breeding farm I worked at, one of the stallions was by English Channel and he tried to scalp somebody, and then one of those babies kicked me in the eye, and
you've got a long storied history with English Channels. Normally when you hear it in the breeding, you're always like, oh, that's gonna be a nice horse,
and then me, I'm like, is it gonna be nice?
Anyway, and I think I messaged you. I was like, wait a second. I thought you said you didn't like
English Channel. Somebody told me, Chelsea, you can't tell the universe you don't want something. You have to tell the universe like what you want. But you said, I don't want this. And then it brought it to you. You manifested that. And I was like, yeah, you're right.
Anyway, it sounds like it's a good outcome.
No, it's fabulous. He's changed my thoughts completely. He lives up to everything that everybody says about the English Channels. Like, he's super athletic. He jumps amazing. Not that we're doing a lot of that yet. He's a big, good-looking horse. He's just very cool, and he's very funny. You can see the whites of his eyes. And so he has almost this people-like quality to him. So
I like that too, when they have that little bit of white and it gives them personality, like see what they're thinking.
He's an eye roller, so
after my own art.
So the first time I rode him English, the first time that I rode him, and the first time I rode him was here at home, and then the next time I was like, let me just put a Western saddle on him and see what he thinks. And he's standing in the cross ties and he's looking at me sideways and his ears are cocked back, not like pinned back to his head, but he's just looking. I'll have to send you the video because it's funny. He's just rolling his eyes like a dog that's in trouble or something, looking at you sideways.
Yeah, this lady.
He's like, what are you doing to me? So yeah, but he's been very fun. Obviously, because of his sesamoid and stuff, obviously he's been cleared for full work and to have a normal career and everything.
That's great.
But I think I also said something about not wanting to do an unraced horse. And so here we are with an unraced horse. But I don't care. I'm open to trying anything. And I had some concerns, right? Because I'm like, oh, other horses who have raced have had more exposure. Like, what is this process going to be like? Because it's a lot different than what I thought I was used to. Yeah. He's just a good boy. He just wants to try anything that I throw at him. I hack him out, pop him over little jumps. We're not crazy far along. We're like walk, trot, cantering, working on the flat work, jumping here and there. And we did our first off property today. But
cool.
Yeah. So that's.
And then tell us about your other horse.
So then there's Fuzzy Wuzzy. Fuzzy for short. And Fuzzy's a four-year-old off-track thoroughbred. She made four starts. She's by Palace. She's out of a Dunkirk mare.
Ooh.
And she's 15-2, and she has a huge hind end on her. And her chest is just about double of any thoroughbred I've ever seen in my life. A lot of people mistake her for a gelding because she is so thick.
Interesting.
And yeah, she's most quarter horse people that I've shown her to. She looks more quarter horsey than our quarter horses. But she's really cool. I'm having a lot of fun with her. Obviously, we plan to do barrel racing and possibly add in the ranch work there. But she's just really smart and good brained and, again, not super far along. I'm big on the foundations, and then come summertime, then everybody will start rolling. We're slowly dipping our feet into going off property. Peppy did our first off property excursion today to a local farm to do a lesson, and then Peppy has gone to the barrel races, and I've ponied her off of Yubi because Yubi's the best horse on the face of the planet, and she's really good for a four-year. I don't know. I don't like to say that, actually. I don't want to say for a four-year-old. She's a good girl. No, she's just a good girl. She has a great brain.
And well, from what you've told us about going to the barrel races, that like that's a big ask for a horse to come and just understand that this is going to be a quiet time.
And she just, you just don't know what it's going to be like when you take them, because you don't know. They could be so different because,
yeah,
if you take them to a regular horse show, for the most part, nobody's galloping full speed. They're in your area, and there's not like yelling. There's just a little more. It's not chaotic. Barrel races are crazy. Yeah. And the big thing with her was just, I took Yubi down to the arena to run him. And so she stayed up at the trailer, and Arminio was just hanging out with her and stuff. And he said she got a little wormy, but then all of a sudden he just was brushing her and he braided her mane and all of that. And she was just happy. She's a people pony. She loves Zelly. They're like the best friends on the face of the planet. And she's just a good egg.
Yeah. So you've already dipped into this a little bit, but in terms of personality and training needs, do you find them to be drastically different, or is it a challenge juggling the two of them, or do you feel like you've figured out a little bit of a program with both of them at this stage?
They're different in the sense that Peppy's the quintessential hunter. He just lopes around, float the rein at him and lope around, and he's really good and he's really smart. And he tries really hard. And the opposite is, because he's a bigger horse to put together. I wouldn't call him like a big giant horse to put together, but he's a good size horse. And he likes to get long, and he can get a little front endy and heavy. So we're working on transitions and things like that. And then Fuzzy, on the other hand, is really naturally well balanced and super athletic in a different way. I've never had a horse come off the track and work over the back immediately.
Wow.
She's just like a bulldog. That's naturally how she carries herself, is she just like these big free flowing shoulders. And
maybe you should do Western dressage with her.
I know. That
would be a good fit.
Yeah. She's an adorable mover. And
it's just going to make everything that much easier because she's already understands how to use her body in that way.
Yeah. Yeah. The other day, just for funsies, I haven't fully started her on the pattern yet, but I was just messing around doing back and forth figurating between two barrels and just teaching her where to position herself, because you don't want to teach them to come in and turn it tight when you're doing slow work, because as soon as you add speed, they're naturally going to want to get closer to the barrel and turn tighter. And so you want to teach them, like, go in wide and come out tight, and you want to make little teardrop shapes. So she was doing it really well at the trot, so I was like, what would happen if I just tried to lift it? And I'm not kidding. I think she's the most naturally athletic horse I've ever started.
That's awesome.
That's really cool.
So it's really cool. I'm really excited. But yeah, they're just total opposite horses. He's Hunter King. She's going to be the barrel queen.
Yeah.
Nice.
Sure.
So we're about, are we 6 months out, 5 months out from the makeover?
It's mid-October, so May.
Cue the horror music.
I know, honestly. I'm going to put some horror music in there.
It was 200 days. By the time this posts, it will be less than that, but maybe we're 5 months. I don't know. I don't think any of us can do math.
Okay, no. Barf. How are you feeling about the timeline this year?
I'm feeling good. Honestly, for the most part, they're both really good-minded horses. We're just trying to do the foundation stuff as best we can. And then my goal is, obviously, over the next 2 months, is we're going to really start ramping up the hauling and going to different venues and trying different things. And I don't ever really set a, I'm not strict on anything. We need to complete this by this, and we need to complete this by this. And this is the goal that we have to, I'm just taking it ride by ride. So yeah. I'm a procrastinator by nature. I think I might have said it before, but as soon as August and September comes, you're going to be talking to a different Chelsea. I'm going to be Chelsea the fire. Chelsea,
okay,
stressed out.
All right.
Now I got to get this done. And now here I'm like, oh yeah, we're just going to take it ride by ride. Anyways.
But, yeah. I feel I can relate to that, where I'm like, I do so well under pressure, and I don't know, I just hate that about myself in a way, but it's like something I know I can count on a little bit. That yeah. little fire underneath of you.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, something also changes in me, because I don't know why, but I have, there's also a competitive side of me that I try to not let come out until the end, because that doesn't help anybody. Uh-oh. It doesn't help the horses. Sure, it
just
does.
Just wait until she's on that competitive trail, Niamh.
I know. She's
literally dueling it out.
Oh, boy. Stay off the competitive trail, Chelsea.
I don't know about competitive trail. The hard thing about doing some speed events for the longest time is I don't know sometimes that I have the patience. So learning things like ranch work or doing competitive trail or something is also teaching me a lot of patience, because before I didn't realize how much my energy could affect horses. And I don't know if it's just getting older and more maturity, or if it's having a child or whatever, but I just realize now how much my energy and intention can influence the horses. And I think that's a big thing. So competitive trail seems like something that I can get easily frustrated with. So let's try it. No, well, just
kidding. Yeah, it's interesting though, because I know talking to you, obviously take the time and the slow time to put that foundation on them. But I guess you switch into high gear as you get closer to the date, and then.
Yeah. Or I just try to I try to tell myself, don't think about it. Don't think about it. Don't think about it. And then when I got to Kentucky last year, he was just a lot different on warm-up day than I was expecting. And then as you get closer to every day, you have results, because barrels, you compete in the morning and then at night and then the next night. You have to talk yourself into being a rational human being and not getting too ahead of yourself and not pushing your horse too much to a point where they're going to fry out there. But then also the competitive side of you is, I should just do it.
It'll be interesting to watch you. So you've got one in the hunters and one in barrels. And there can't be two more different disciplines there. And Peppy better be ready for some really fast hunter rounds, I think. You guys are going to have fastest time. They're going to be like, this isn't timed.
I know. It's going to be right. Going back to like when I was a kid and we're singing, row, row your boat.
Stop leaving out strides.
Yes. Breathe.
That was a six, not a three. Oh my God.
Thankfully, he's the one who's, no, I think I'm just going to lope along.
Yeah.
How does it feel going into this year as a returning RRP trainer? Do you have any lessons from the past years that are shaping your approach now? I think you've touched on this a little bit.
Yeah, I think I'm just staying the course. I've been slow to, partially because of my crazy schedule, but I've been slow to start taking them many places just because I want to get that real solid foundation and good communication at home so that I can be like, okay, this is what we work on at home. And see, it's not that different somewhere else. And I think developing a really strong communication line with them is really important. And I think that thoroughbreds are so intuitive and sensitive. And I don't mean that in a sensitive, like light them up and they're going to run around and be crazy, but sensitive in the way that I think that they're very in tune to us and what we're thinking and things like that. I try to, obviously, in daily life and things, there's going to be chaos. I'm super chaotic. So I think I try to listen to a lot of motivational stuff. And I think sometimes when you look within and you are having an issue, sometimes I think, is this me or is this them? And then I try to take the deep breath, calm myself, and it's almost meditative.
Yeah.
Okay, am I taking stuff from outside in? And then I try to just connect and be in the moment when I'm riding. And I think that makes the biggest difference in training and stuff, because when I was a teenager, I was just like, go. And I'm just looking to make really well-rounded horses and give them the opportunity to try different things and put them in a lot of situations that are different and give them all different types of experiences. But at the end of the day, I just try to provide really good management to them as far as nutrition and body work and healthcare and being on top of all of those things, like throughout, and not letting them get too far. I try to be very in tune with what their needs are. I've done the animal communication with Peppy. I still got to do Fuzzy, but I just like to stay in tune, and it's very easy to get distracted now. And there's so much going on and this needs attention here and this and that and everything. But like I said, trying to stay on top of the management, trying to stay on top of all of our mental states.
Yeah.
And those are the big things: exposure, foundation, and breathing.
I think what you're talking about is really interesting. And I just noticed something today when I was working with Oscar. He's obviously in a new environment, and so every conversation is a test of the relationship so far, because it's like every place I take him on the farm is brand new for him. And he was a little frazzled by some stuff today, and I noticed where I was like, if I got upset about something that was going on, I realized very quickly he was getting upset because he didn't know what to do. And so I think there are horses like him that then decide they're going to take over and start making decisions. It's not mean-spirited. It's not naughty. It's him sensing that I'm feeling a little frazzled. And then he's, I'll just make a decision then. And then you realize he's counting on me to tell him what to do and where to be. And so it was really interesting for me to see that in real time, where when left to his own devices, when I started unraveling a little bit, even if it was just because I needed 5 minutes to think about something, he was like, then I'll make a decision. And I was like, oh no, that's a bad idea. So I think it's interesting how they really are tuned
dying
in.
Dying to learn more about this.
You can see it in action at the farm someday.
We were going to talk about a little bit of your training philosophy and any tips you have, because you've had, not specifically your RRP horses, but you've had so many OTTBs come through your hands. Is there anything in specific, or I think you did just talk about this with your RRP horses, but anything you've learned about setting them up for long-term success?
I'm huge on the groundwork. Because I believe it's the first line of communication. Mm-hmm. I try to establish a good form of communication with them, because I just feel like if they don't care about me and then I just go and sit on their back, I don't know. I guess maybe it's because I'm old now and I have had a lot of trauma or whatever. And I want to know that, like, they're with me. You know what I mean? I want to know that just a little ruffle of something is not going to ruin their whole day and just off us both. So I like to start off with groundwork, even if it's just walking them. I find a lot of, not all, but a lot of horses that come off the track can be pushy. And I want them to walk with me. I don't want to lead you. I don't want to drag the horses around, and I don't want them to drag me. So I expect that we have a partnership. When I stop, you stop. If I walk like a little granny walking like tiny little steps, then you're going to walk tiny little steps. And those are the things that I start with at first. And they're very trusting animals. And so my big things are creating a calm, quiet environment for the most part, except for my daughter should be on the payroll as far as like desensitizing the horse. So it's like a great combination of not only are we creating a calm environment, but there's also chaos going on. But teaching them that you don't have to react to the child who's on the tricycle and going Mach 40.
Right. Aisle. Screaming while she's coming down a hill.
You just don't know what you're going to encounter when you go places like RRP or barrel races. Kids ride around on those little hoverboards or whatever they are now.
Oh, yeah.
And that's terrifying. Yeah. Sally should be on the payroll. Like I said, I think the big things that I'm trying to work on when I first get them is, number one, getting the diet right so that it's supporting the gut. And low starch, low sugar, high fiber, lots of forage, getting them acclimated to turnout, whether that be, did they just come from the track? Do they need a little bit of round pen time? Do we start in a smaller field? Are they ready to just get kicked out? Do they want to live out? Do they not want to live out? And everybody's such a individual. It's hard to say exactly what the recipe is, because you have to take it day by day with them. But strong boundaries is a thing. And I'm not saying get after them. I just mean your space is your space and my space, and we are together. However, you're not on top of me, and you're also not running away from me. And then we do the lunging. And when I do my first rides, occasionally I have somebody on the ground, or I do them in the round pen. And then we just go from there and evaluate, do we have breaks? Can we trot? Yeah. Is there anxiety here? And if there is anxiety, I had one recently who, I'm sure she hasn't done the mounting block thing, but I was just like, if this is all we're going to work on for today, and I'm not even going to sit on you, and you figure out that this is the mounting block, and I'm going to go up and down it and stand next to you. And it might have taken 30 minutes, and then that was it. And then I just end it, because I also don't drill horses. I feel like horses are really smart and they need time to process things. So if 20 minutes gets the point across, then it's 20 minutes. If it's an hour and that's all, and it took a while, or obviously there's conditioning and exercising and things like that. But when I'm working on things like neuro pathways and things, they say people and the horses learn best in shorter spurts of training. And so I believe in that and I don't overdo it. I just want to get to the point and call it a day. And I feel like that gets them going faster than saying, okay. And I don't go in with any goals whatsoever other than calm and relaxation. And if we can do it 1% better than yesterday is all I care about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, something we talk about a lot is, and I think it comes with practice and experience with these horses, but it can be very hard, but you can't get greedy. You've got to be able to say, let's not push for that again, yeah, or push
one more time,
or an extra bit. Oh, he did this, so let's do a little bit more. Put them away and bring them out tomorrow, and they're going to be better at it.
Yeah, I think I know that from learning the hard way, and I've learned everything in life the hard way.
Yes.
I do think thoroughbreds have a way of taking new information and letting it marinate, whether that's overnight or over. We've had horses where you took them out for their first couple of events and then you gave them the winter off, so 2 months or something, and then you bring them back out in the spring and they were like a trained horse that like understood its new job.
Like, how did that happen?
It just baked in over the winter. Yeah. So I think thoroughbreds are great for that. I think they're very mindful, and I do think you can fry their brains by overloading them.
Yeah, well, and I think there's a threshold.
Yeah.
There's a threshold, and you can't pass the threshold. And I don't ever believe in starting fights with horses. I just believe in, if it's too much, buddy, we're going to just go somewhere else, get one good thing out of it, and I'm getting down. I don't push the envelope. And I think sometimes, like you said, you can take it too far. And once they hit that threshold, I think they lose trust with you.
For sure.
Yeah,
definitely. One of the reasons we're so excited to have you back is the work that you're doing to make OTTBs more accessible. How do you think organizations like Pasture Place are helping to expand the pipeline?
I just think that it's amazing that they're giving opportunities to all different types of people like me. And I've been passionate about thoroughbreds for so long. And I think it's amazing that they're giving people and horses opportunities, and then showing people just how amazing and versatile they are. I think we have a junior on our team this year. Allie's coming back for a second year, and then the two gals who ride full time, Amy and Kirsten. And I just feel like there's such a cool array of people going and doing different things. Like, it's, and the fact that they're giving these horses who, again, wouldn't be easily adopted out for whatever reasons, whether it's the horses going to RRP or the horses who went down to Aiken, that's just so cool. I think that's so different than what a lot of the other models are. And it's just broadening the horizons of different horses coming off the track. And I'm also an ambassador for the Western Thoroughbred, which that page has been going on for about 10 years. Around the same time RRP and things started getting up and going, I think it's just incredible to show the difference between 10 years ago, because I've had one of my OTTBs that I've barrel raced and rodeoed on. Back then, people used to make fun of me at barrel races and things because of the thoroughbred thing. And I caught a lot of flack. And I think sometimes it still happens, but like, it's becoming more and more common. I used to be the only person running a thoroughbred, or maybe there was one other one, but I think the other day at the barrel race that I went to was a smaller barrel race, but there was like five or six thoroughbreds there.
Oh, that's awesome.
And that's a huge difference. And so to me, that means that the script is flipped.
and
more people are saying, okay, I'll give a thoroughbred a chance, especially considering the quarter horse industry right now. To get a good barrel prospect that's bred for barrel racing, you're looking at, on the cheap side, like the low five figures as babies, unbroke.
Wow.
And the industry has grown to horses selling for six figures and things like that. And that's your open rodeo or big super show winning horses and things. So I just love the fact that some people are willing to give them a shot, because any industry, whether it be the English disciplines and things, horses who are being specifically bred for those sports are becoming unattainable for the regular person. And off-track thoroughbreds are in a price bracket nowadays. They're not free, and they're not $500 like back when I was in college. And so their value has gone up, but the type of people who are buying them are able, or not that, I'm sure plenty of upper level people are interested in thoroughbreds too, but I just mean that they're much more accessible to wide variety of people as far as their price bracket than going and buying a big imported warm blood or purposefully bred quarter horse for whatever discipline. So I think Pasture Place giving the opportunity to for me to train some Western ones or even the hunters, and the Western Thoroughbred showing over the years how many thoroughbreds are actually competitive in different disciplines like barrel racing and sorting and ranch work and all different events. I just think those two things, those two organizations are so near and dear to my heart because I've seen it grow throughout all the, the last decade.
Yeah, absolutely.
Are there ways that you hope that the industry continues to improve for horses, trainers, or adult amateurs?
It's hard to say because the world is just so expensive right now. But I would just love particularly the big thing for me why I got into riding Western events is that I was a broke college kid and I absolutely could not afford showing hunter jumper shows between the USF memberships and fees on tops of fees and all of that, where now in 2025 I went to the barrel race the other day and I ran for one horse to run in to do two warm-ups, two runs and a side pot. It was $60.
Wow. That's amazing. And then you can actually win money, too.
Win money. Did I win any money?
No. But you also don't care because you didn't pay that much money to enter.
Exactly. So then it makes me feel better about providing those experiences, whereas sometimes I just feel, I don't to be like, oh, it's so elitist, but sometimes I feel like the industry can be that way and it's going that way because of the economy and things like that. So I would love to see, this probably doesn't have anything to do with thoroughbreds, but I would just love for horses to be accessible and not drive out the little guy. How do we do it? Because it's so expensive to feed the horses and take care of them properly and everything like that. But I don't know how we fix that. I don't know how we're going to save the world.
One horse at a time.
I was going to say one OTB at a time.
Chelsea, thank you so much for joining us. Before we go, where can people follow your journey and support the work that you're doing?
I'm a big Facebooker. So you can find me on Facebook. My name is Chelsea O'Brien. You can add me as a friend or follow me on Facebook. And I post a lot of videos and reels and nonsense on there. And then
cute stuff.
Yeah, cute stuff with my kid. And then on Instagram, I have at CKOB because that's like the millennial thing. That's my regular. So I spelled out my initials and I've had that since forever. CKOB is my regular account. And then I link all my other RRP accounts with that. If you're still interested in my journey with B from last year, he's at RRP. _ unbeknownst to the number two, me. And then Peppy's is at RRP _ the Pepsodent show. And then I have a Instagram for Fuzzy Wuzzy, but all my personal horses always fall on the back burner. So I haven't been very good about posting on that one. I actually don't even know that I've posted her at all on her own page.
You can just send us links and we'll be sure to post them.
Cool. All right. Yeah. So that's how you get a hold of me.
Awesome. And how can people find out more about Pastured Place and also the Western Thoroughbred and help support them and their missions?
So the website is pastureplace.org. And on there, you can view the other adoptable horses. They post on their Facebook page at Pasture Place. They're active on Instagram. There's a lot of activity this year between RRP horses and then the other adoptable horses who are not rode to Kentucky, but they have a lot of really nice horses, really impressive. And
yeah, they really do.
The girls are doing a great job.
Yeah.
And then as far as the Western Thoroughbred goes, their Instagram handle is at OTTBWestern. And then on Facebook, it's just the Western Thoroughbred and their active on both on Facebook, you'll get a lot more historical content, because there's a lot of interesting things about the AQHA deleting history or changing the breeding of horses that were thoroughbreds, because there's a lot of foundationals who are huge in the development of the quarter horse, and they tried to sweep that under the rug. Caitlin does a great job of exposing that stuff, and she'd be like,
who knew the quarter horse world was so full of drama?
So savage. I know.
Learning so much.
They're the ones who put this mark on the thoroughbred. Ooh, thoroughbreds, I don't want my quarter horse built like a thoroughbred. But really, the quarter horses are built like thoroughbreds, because they're, if you look at the NFR, the horses that run barrels at the NFR, some of these horses are 75 to, I think I saw one was like 82% thoroughbred, the barrel horses.
Oh, wow.
That's how much, it's, that's, you know, funny. That's how.
It's like the warm bloods. Right. Yeah, I know. A lot of warm bloods have a huge percentage of thoroughbred. You right. just don't know.
Exactly.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Thank you, Chelsea. If you enjoyed today's episode, we'd love it if you left us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Facebook. And don't forget, if you leave us a review, we'll send you some OTTB on top stickers as a thank you. You can connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, or TikTok, and get in touch with interview suggestions or episode ideas anytime at OTTBOnTap.com. And if you want more, from bonus episodes and videos to our Evaluate series and private insiders group, head to OTTBOnTap.supercast.com to join. We always love hearing from you.
Cheers.
Cheers.